Hello and welcome to Multiform. Every week we get together with... Already flubbed it. Oh well, leaving it in. Every week we get together to talk about the latest Xbox news, rumors, and the games we've been playing lately. And there's a lot to talk about this week. New episodes post every Monday morning. You can email the show, questions@multiformpodcast.com, or you can follow us on social media, Twitter, Facebook, @MultiformPod. You'll get updates there on the latest episodes when they post, or any changes to schedule if we miss an episode or we bump it a day, which is very rare. This is episode 256. I'm Tim Shelton, and on this week I'm joined by my favorite lawyer, Spencer Rain.
Yo, I'm back after 2 weeks.
I forget, why were you gone two weeks ago? I know this last week, actually I forgot why it was last week too. You were traveling last week.
What is today? Yeah, I think I, 2 weeks ago I was in Florida, and last week I don't remember.
I don't remember either.
Maybe look on Google Maps. I let Google Maps track my every movement, so let me see what I was doing last Sunday. Let's see, July 9th. Oh, it was my, all right, this isn't that bad.
Your anniversary dinner, I remember.
Anniversary dinner, yeah, but not my actual anniversary. That's why I didn't remember.
Yeah, I remember, because Brett and I talked about it on the show very briefly.
Yeah, my actual anniversary is July 10th, but we did stuff on the 9th on Sunday, because we'd have more time. So there you go. That's why I was gone the last 2 weeks.
Well, since you were gone the last 2 weeks, why don't you regale us with updates on anything interesting that you've been up to the last 2 weeks?
Oh, you mean in my life or in Xbox land?
Well, I mean, you can always talk about your life, but in Xbox land, I'm specifically interested. Although, since we were last on the show together, we both beat A Plague Tale, but I already talked about my opinion extensively on the episode after you were the first one you were gone.
Mm-hmm.
So,
because we beat it like within a couple days of each other, I think.
Yeah, I might have even been just a day apart, maybe a couple days. But most interestingly, since I talked about it, there were some job postings on LinkedIn for, I think it was LinkedIn, for Sobo Studios. And they said they were hiring for the Plague Tale team in that. So
seems like it might be making a third one.
Yeah, well, it could be a third one, although devil's advocate, they could be hiring for the Plague Tale team, and then they make something else. They just don't know what it's going to be called yet.
Yeah,
but I hope it is, in fact, a third game, since a third game is teased at the end of the second game. Like, the second game definitely has a closure and a finality to it, but there is an after credit scene that tees up a third game.
Yeah.
But it could also not. They could leave it where it is and never go back to it, and it would be totally satisfying. But I think there's a nugget there that would be really interesting to explore. But anyway, let's hear your thoughts on the ending.
Well, I was going to say, we could. I mean, is it a spoiler? Game's been out for like 10 months now.
I mean, just give people fair warning and tell them to fast forward 10 minutes.
Well, this is a spoiler, kind of, not really, for the post credits end of the second Plague Tale game. But, basically, I mean, it shows a baby with the mark that Hugo has, like, on its face, and then it's wrapped up in modern-looking clothes, and then you hear
the macula.
The macula mark, and then you hear somebody walking with, like, heels. It sounded like, to me at least, I guess it could be boots, but it sounded
and
like
a modern,
heels.
And a modern heart rate monitor, right?
Right, I think so. The whole idea you kind of learn in the second game is that it's every 700 years there's a plague, so the famous bubonic plague, Black Death, whatever, was in the late 1340s, which is obviously when these two games take place. But then they also referenced the Plague of Justinian, which was during like the, I want to say like the 650s or the 640s, when Justinian the Great was the Byzantine emperor. So the implication then is there would be 700 years from the 1340s would be the 2040s, aka like 20 years from now.
I think it's 800 years, and I think it's 2140.
Is it 800 years? Maybe it
I think
is.
It's 800. That's what I said when I looked it up, and when I was looking at others to see what their interpretation was, if I was right. But either way, that means we would either get a game set near future.
Yeah, you're right. Because Plague of Justinian was in the 540s.
Yeah. Okay. So Yeah, that is like really
20 years from now.
Even if it was only 15 years in the future, that would be interesting. But I think 115 years is way more interesting because it's like, then you're in like completely make it up. I mean, 100 years ago, we barely had the automobile.
Yeah.
Did we have the automobile? Yeah, we had the
automobile. Automobile came around in the 1900s, 19-teens, early 19-teens.
I know, but in my head, 100 years ago is still, like, I always forget we're deep into the 2020s.
Well, true.
It's like how 1970 feels like 20 years ago or 30 years ago, but it was actually, like, 60 or 70 years ago.
Well, in 70. 70 well, years ago was the 40s and 50s.
Is that right? Yeah, it would be the 50s.
Like if somebody was born in 1953, they would be turning 70 this year. Overall, speaking just briefly on Playtale, since I mean it was basically 2 weeks ago, more than that actually, almost 3 weeks. 3 weeks ago this week that I beat it, because it was the days before I missed that first episode before we went to Florida.
Into the game is beautiful, like the whole run up to the ending.
Yeah, and I was apprehensive because I thought there'd be another annoying boss fight like at the end of the first one, where you fought the priest guy in the cathedral with his like mountains of his tornado columns of rats. It was so annoying. But there wasn't any of that.
And if there was, you would have been fighting a character you don't want to fight.
Yeah.
No, this game ended more in a way that was like gut wrenching. Like I felt terrible after the ending. Go ahead.
No, I mean, I don't know. It was pretty good. I don't know. I guess I don't really know what my thoughts are on the game as a whole. Like I it's been 3 years since I played the first one, so I don't really know how it compares. I think it's probably better. I think it's kind of like we've said a lot, just that natural progression, kind of adding different gameplay elements, adding more depth and detail. It seemed like you had kind of had like a third member of your party a lot more often, just of different people. I thought some of the supporting characters were kind of cool.
Yeah, it was nice that they rotated those out throughout the game. So you had a fresh kind of like
every few chapters interaction changeover, it seemed like. There was still some where it was just you and Hugo, obviously, but it felt like there was more of that third party presence throughout this game, just different people like you said. I don't know. I mean, it was cool. I remember when we were talking about this game last year or in the year before, even when it was first announced, I feel like we were talking a lot about like what the name can mean, like what does Requiem mean? And like, does Amicia like get more comfortable with killing people or just like growing up, I guess, and being less of a child. And kind of that idea of like the Tomb Raider reboots, how like the first time you kill somebody is Lara Croft in the 2013 or 2014 Tomb Raider. She's like really like taken aback by it and she can't believe that she did it type of a thing. And obviously kind of the first Playtale game, there's a little bit of that. And then the question was like, all right, how is her character going to evolve into the second game? And, like her experience is obviously like constantly surrounded by death because it's the Black Plague on the one hand, but then on the other hand, she's having to potentially kill people to protect herself and her brother. And there's a little bit of that, but not really. I think later
they like touched on it for a second and then never come
back. Yeah, well, in like part. And later in the game, maybe not later in the game, but whenever you would have, I forget his name, the like other younger kid that was with you.
Yeah.
I forget his name. Whenever he'd be around
the alchemist.
Yeah, yeah. Whenever he would be around, it would seem like he was trying to be like the angel on your shoulder because he would always be like shocked if you killed somebody or, you know, killed a bunch of people type of a thing. But yeah, there wasn't as much into that as I thought there would be because it was still obviously more about Hugo, like the kind of the meta story is more about him. But yeah, I mean, the thing at the end was like, I remember we were messaging about this in our group, me, just like how much can these kids take as far as like the emotional damage, and especially Amicia. By the end of the game, it's like, geez Louise.
Yeah, it's a gut punch. The end run of the game, it is kind of refreshing that they chose, much like Red Dead Redemption 2, when it kind of has a semi-dark ending, but not as dark. But like, there's an epilogue to this game. Like, there is a bright, like, they jump a year forward to see Amicia setting out to seek out others and reignite her, like, I don't know, mission and remembrance of her brother. But the only complaint I really have about this franchise is that there's way too much of the game that they limit my movement. Like, there's just so much of the game where they make me go slow. Like, I want to run or I want to move, and they're trying to tell me something, so they slow me down. And it can really bring the game to a crawl. But when you're playing the game or experiencing the story, I love it. I love it so much. It's also because there's so few stealth games. Like, you can really make this a fun stealth game, especially since they limit your abilities in so many ways. Like, you can't, you can only directly kill people by hitting them in the head if they don't have a helmet, or stabbing them, but your knives break immediately. So, like, direct conflict really isn't a viable option most of the time, unless you have crossbow bolts. So you're constantly finding ways to use the environment and stealth to move past your objective. And generally this game incentivizes you to stay hidden for most of the game, which I really like.
Yeah, I will say that's one thing that's kind of annoying. Like, sometimes if you're, I don't know, there's just a few times where I feel like I was struggling to play stealthily, and it's like, if you get into combat, it's almost like once you use up your resources, then you have to kind of like cheese the game a little bit. Like, there definitely were a few times where I saw that there was like one of those doors that you open and then you close it and lock it, you know, it was like the CD transition. There's definitely a couple times where I like saw that's where I needed to get to, and it was like I was in combat and I just sprinted to it and opened it. Like, there's dudes running after me, you know, or not, they don't run, I guess, because they're like, it's supposed to be like more plodding, methodical usually. But yeah, there's a couple times where I'd run to that and go through it and basically advance without doing anything with those, to those enemies. And I don't know, I just, some of that was kind of silly to me. It's kind of annoying if you weren't able to stay stealthy.
Yeah.
But I guess that's the point, is to be
stealthy. I hope they do another game. I love to see what they do with a different time period. I would love to know what they do with different characters, because like, obviously I think Hugo and Amicia's story is done.
Yeah.
So, you know, how does that carry forward to give some familiarity to players? Like, do we get a descendant of Amicia interacting with this new thing, and she's carried down like the knowledge through the ages? Or there's lots of ways they could tie it together with the other game with that, but not do it in a heavy-handed, overt way. Well, if you don't want to, if that's all you want to say about A Plague Tale, which is fine.
Yeah.
What else did you get up to?
Yeah, that's pretty much all I have on that. While I was in Florida, actually, I played a little bit via cloud. Mass Effect 3, finished the Citadel, and then when I got back, I actually finished the story finally on the, so I finished the trilogy on the Legendary Edition finally. Just this afternoon, though, I was playing my Mass Effect 1 save on a different character because I just wanted to, even though I've played.
How'd you feel playing that on cloud in
Florida? Was fine. There was definitely some lag. There's definitely some lag. Basically, what I did was I did the Citadel DLC, and the only time I was ever in combat, I mean, there's combat in the Citadel DLC, I suppose, a little bit, but then like doing the Arsenal, Armax Arsenal Arena, which is they added for that DLC, which is just kind of like a wave game mode. You and two other squad mates, if you want them to be, against the AIs. But it was a little bit laggy, definitely, doing that stuff. Like, there would be a ping lag, but I was playing on the lowest difficulty, so it didn't matter. But it definitely wasn't as good as it was in when I played earlier this year in Colorado, which that might just be because the Wi-Fi wasn't as good where I was.
Yeah, it's based on how good the Wi-Fi is and how close you are to a data center.
Yeah.
So, like, if we're, but that's Florida. They have to have a ton of data centers in Florida.
Yeah, I don't know. Such, I also tried playing, I also played AC Odyssey for like 5 minutes because I was like, oh, this is on cloud streaming. I haven't played this game in like 5 years. I should check it out. But it was like way too laggy at that moment. So I was like, this is too much. I can't do anything here. And then Forza as well was just too laggy for me to try to actually, I drove around a little bit, but it's kind of just like, I didn't, a racing game, I feel like, even is more than a combat based game, you have to have a perfect connection just because of the how easy it is to screw something up, and you just be constantly rewinding, which would be annoying. So Yeah, that's what I did there. Played a little bit of Lego Star Wars. I finally finished Revenge of the Sith. And last week, I think it was, I told you guys that I was like, I always reminded with how funny the, you know, and funny and well done, like spoofing of the cutscenes are in that game. I feel like more so than any other Lego game. Mm-hmm. And that's definitely true with the Revenge of the Sith stuff. And I started A New Hope because I'm doing them, you know, not chronologically, but numerically 1 through 9. And yeah, I started A New Hope, and that was actually pretty fun. I liked the beginning of that. They did a good job, I think, making that into the Lego game. It was kind of funny or interesting, actually. There was a few Rogue One things that they put at the very beginning. Like, basically, the part at the end of Rogue One when Leia gets the Death Star plans and the guy's like, what did they bring us? And she turns around. It's the very scary, uncanny valley Princess Leia. And she says, hope. They had that in the Lego game, which I thought was interesting. And then, like, the Darth Vader hall scene, they also had a Lego version of, which is obviously in Rogue One and not in A New Hope. So that was kind of interesting. I was like, this makes sense. This is what people, I feel like a lot of some people imagine how A New Hope really does start, would be with those aspects of Rogue One. So that was kind of neat. I played a little bit of Microsoft Flight Simulator just because I was wanting to fly around some places that I'd been recently. Game is still really cool.
I wonder what's going to happen with that game when the new one comes out. Like, is the new one also going to have the entire Earth? And is it just going to replace it like old Flight Simulator games used to?
What do you mean the new one?
The Microsoft Flight Simulator 2024, the new game. You thought that was an update, didn't you?
Yeah, I thought it was just like a...
It's a new game.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I assume it'll probably be...
all the old content plus new content,
yeah,
kind of thing, but packaged differently like Madden does.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I forgot. I didn't even realize that, but I don't know.
It's a good question. Yeah, they didn't do a great job. Like, naming it Microsoft Flight Simulator 2024 is both expected and confusing because, like, Madden obviously just add in NBA, they just add a year onto the next release, but it's not an annualized release, so you don't need to put the year, but then Microsoft has done that with like Windows 2000. So I don't know. Yeah,
they're very inconsistent.
Microsoft's naming is the worst. Like, remember how they skipped Windows 9? They're just like, Windows 8? Okay, here's Windows 10.
They went from Xbox to Xbox 360 to Xbox One. That's the poster child of terrible naming.
Actually, every Xbox except for the original one has a bad name. Like, even Xbox 360 didn't really make that much sense. Like, just because they were afraid to be Xbox 2, or I don't know. 360 is tolerable, but it got so much worse. Everybody always expected it, you remember, to be Xbox 720 and then Xbox, you know, 1080 or whatever.
That. I'm looking at the, I thought this was...
They could have just called it Xbox 4K, you know, like the Series X, or Xbox 8K, or, you know, the Xbox Series X could have been the Xbox 2K, right? But that you can't have 2K because that's a brand. But you get what I'm saying. Like, if the resolution is the selling point, make that the delineator.
I'm looking at the Wikipedia page for Microsoft Flight Simulator, and they started out great. It was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and then Flight Simulator 98, because of how, you know, big Windows 98 was. You got to have the tie-in marketing.
Yep.
That was the sixth one. And then they started getting off track here. Flight Simulator 2000, which, of course, like Madden,
Windows 2000.
Came out in 1999. Flight Simulator 2002, which came out in 2001. And then Flight Simulator 2004, A Century of Flight, which came out in 2003. And then
funny because Microsoft Flight Simulator 2024 is going to come out in 2024, not be named for the next year the way that the games used to.
Yeah. That is funny. And then Flight Simulator 10, which is the one that I have actually upstairs, PC disc, that came out in 2006. Wow. That was the 10th entry. And then Flight Simulator was the 11th one, came out in 2020. And then Flight Simulator 2024, coming out in 2024, will be the 12th entry in the series. But you're right. Yeah, I had no idea. For some reason, I just thought it was like...
DLC. Yep.
Well, I thought it was like, the 2024 roadmap, blah, 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 blah.
I guess I thought it was going to be a live service game, but to be honest, I'm kind of grateful because I've complained a lot about the update system for that game, like how you have to update in game after you download the game update. And I hope they do some stuff to address that because it's really annoying. The whole architecture of the interface is pretty crappy, but it's a simulator game.
It's very annoying.
Even on PC, like not just on console, like it sucks no matter where you play it. Yeah. Okay. Well, so I had two things that I played of interest. Well, not of interest. One's of interest. I played Assassin's Creed Valhalla. I'm trying to stay with mainlining one game at a time more than I usually do so that I can be ready for the fall when there's a lot of stuff that I really want to play. So I'm playing Assassin's Creed Valhalla because I'd like to have the majority of what I wanted to do in that game done before Assassin's Creed Mirage comes out. And right now I'm not really playing anything, waiting for Starfield. So focusing on AC Valhalla, if I finish that, I'll play something else before Starfield comes out. And then I'll probably only play Starfield for a considerable amount of time. So I'm roughly, I think, 45 hours in now. And I was telling Spencer and Gus today, the surprising thing to me is I only have 13 achievements after 45 hours. Now, I've done a fair amount of side content, and a lot of the side content, you don't get the achievement until you've completed all of the activities of that type. So that takes a lot of time because you have to clear the whole map and get to all the areas to clear everything, for example. And I think I'm probably 2/3 of the way done with the pledging and taking alliances. I think I have like 2 or 3 left, but it's good. I like it more than I used to, but there's still a lot of things about it that I like less than Origins and Odyssey. Particularly the resource management, I think, is a lot worse. You just need a lot of resources to upgrade things. And so you really got to commit yourself to one build or two builds, because if you want to swap out your gear and get it up to like a high level, you're going to be using a lot of resources. So really, the incentive to swap stuff around really isn't there. It's already an insanely long game, and it would become insanely longer if you were switching stuff all the time. But I've always been a big lover of Assassin's Creed. If I had to put Valhalla somewhere, I'd probably put it in the middle of the pack as far as my love of Assassin's Creed. It's nowhere near as... like Unity, I didn't really enjoy. It had a lot of things that irked me. So if that's at one end of the spectrum, this is more somewhere towards the middle. But I'm sure I'll talk about it more once I get near the end of it and everything. And I will eventually play the DLC if I have time. And I know that not everybody that listens to this wants to hear about Assassin's Creed Valhalla every week, since that's an older game. But, you know, I'm going to talk about what I'm going to talk about. The other thing I've been playing... and not that's an overstatement, is I've been playing Exoprimal since it came out on Friday. Now, the overstatement is I haven't been playing it very much because I don't think I like it. It has things that I should like it kind of feels like Anthem in a way. You get into a mech suit, you kill dinosaurs, but it has something wonky with the controls to where I couldn't get the sensitivity where it felt good, and I didn't feel like messing with it anymore. So I was like, you know what, screw this, I'm just gonna uninstall the game. So I didn't even play like 2 hours. I did some tutorial stuff and was messing with the sensitivity, and I was like, so I really don't have an opinion about the game itself. I found it annoying that the controls were set up in such a way that they were, I think it's the aim acceleration maybe, but I always have trouble tuning controls. I don't like to have to do too much fine tuning in a game because I either make it worse or I don't understand the terms in specific games enough to get it to where I want it to be. But like, you know, I would move to like aim in a certain direction and it would go, I think, slow, but then too fast and just swoop right by what I'm trying to shoot. So the accuracy was just so far down. And, you know, I was trying to like turn down the sensitivity, but that turns it down globally. It doesn't turn down just the whole, like, it's too slow, now it's too fast, and now it's just too slow across the board. It was a mess. I don't know. The game doesn't seem to be getting the best reception. I saw something out there that was kind of calling it like a rare dud recently from Capcom. I don't think it's a dud. I mean, it certainly seems like there's something there to have fun with, but the aiming is messed up. like, I can imagine most people are going to want to tweak something to make it feel better if that aim acceleration is what I was experiencing, kind of jacking it up. But I don't want to talk any more about, well, actually, we've already been going 20 minutes, what we've been playing, but Spencer was out 2 weeks, because it was a big week of news. So let's get into that. So we had a lot happen with the Activision Blizzard acquisition this week, and I'm going to do a quick summary just to get all of us together up to speed, and then we can talk about it, and then I'll take a pause and we can talk about the UK situation and some other parts of it after we talk about this first part. So Judge Corley came back with her initial, I don't know what you call it, Spencer, what findings? It's not findings, her response, her whatever.
Ruling.
Her ruling. Tuesday. Okay, there we go. On Tuesday, July 11th, and she denied the preliminary injunction. Now, FTC appealed on Thursday, which was actually not totally expected because they did not appeal. They've lost three other big tech lawsuits or injunctions in the last few years since this new FTC head took over, and they did not appeal any of those, I believe. So they did appeal it on Thursday up to the Ninth Circuit, and the Ninth Circuit turned around and denied it within 24 hours. So Friday, we had the Ninth Circuit denying the request for a preliminary injunction again. They also, in between those two, asked Judge Corley for a preliminary injunction pending the appeal of their preliminary injunction. I think it was called a temporary something or other, but basically they wanted an injunction.
Temporary restraining order.
Yeah, to keep them from closing while they wait for the Ninth Circuit to rule on the appeal of the first preliminary injunction. So an injunction on an injunction. All of those were denied. So Friday at midnight, I believe it was, officially the temporary restraining order was lifted and Microsoft was free to close Activision Blizzard acquisition pending the one outstanding item, which is the UK CMA. Let's see. Then following that, Microsoft and the CMA announced that after what happened with Tuesday, with the Judge Corley denying the preliminary injunction, that they would be pausing their lawsuits against each other in the UK. The Microsoft and the CMA, they filed a joint motion to pause the lawsuit to pursue negotiations. Since then, CNBC has reported that Microsoft is going to make a small divestiture in the cloud space in the UK to satisfy UK regulators, although I haven't seen that confirmed anywhere outside of CNBC. And the CMA extended the deadline to review the deal to August 29th, which they said was to review a detailed and complex proposal for Microsoft. So the UK could now hold and not rule until August 29th, a month and a half from now, on the new offer that Microsoft put forth. The final piece in this is today, as we record, it's Sunday, July 16th. Earlier today, Phil Spencer tweeted and said, "We're pleased to announce that Microsoft and PlayStation have signed a binding agreement to keep Call of Duty on PlayStation following the acquisition of Activision Blizzard. We look forward to a future where where players globally have more choice to play their favorite games," end quote. And it was confirmed by independent journalists like at The Verge and others that it is a 10-year deal for Call of Duty and that it only includes Call of Duty. The Verge saying on Twitter, "Update: Microsoft confirmed to us that the deal only covers the next 10 years of Call of Duty, and this specific deal doesn't include other Activision Blizzard titles." Okay, with all of that background out of the way, I'm going to toss it to you, Spencer. Spencer, how do you feel about how all this court stuff went down? You're a lawyer. You can explain or make this interesting for the audience, maybe. And also, how do you feel about this outcome and what it means and all
well,
that?
I'm glad it's finally over. I think everybody near can over. Say that, basically. I mean, yeah, not 100% over, but certainly like we're at like 98%. Whereas you, with your nice football reference, Tim, you said we were at the 1 yard line, I think, on Twitter.
Yeah, now we're at the 1 centimeter week. Line.
Yeah. Yeah. We had first and goal at the one, and now we just advanced the ball an inch. So,
yeah. Once you're past the one, don't they just call it like first
and inches? When you're inside the 10, it's goal to go. So it'd be first and goal, second and goal, third and goal, fourth and goal. But yeah, no, I mean, first of all, yeah, glad that we're basically done here. Because I know she, the Judge Corley issued her ruling on Tuesday saying no preliminary injunction. They appealed that, like you said, to the Ninth Circuit kind of on an emergency basis and asked her, while we're doing this, can you do a temporary restraining order? And she's like, no. And the Ninth Circuit was also like, no, no preliminary injunction. Well, this is for the deal while this is ongoing. So pretty straight up denials across the board. Technically, they could appeal to the Supreme Court beyond the Ninth Circuit, but there's less than 0% chance that they would do that.
I'm trying to find the Judge Corley's, I think I put it in our chat, her response and her ruling, because yeah, here it is. It was pretty definitive. Here it is. Judge Corley, this is all a quote. There are no internal documents, emails, or chats contradicting Microsoft's stated intent to make Call of Duty exclusive to Xbox consoles. Despite the compelling, the completion of extensive discovery in the FTC administration proceedings, including producing of nearly 1 million documents and 30 depositions, the FTC has not identified a single document which contradicts Microsoft's publicly stated commitment to make Call of Duty available on PlayStation and Nintendo Switch. And then here's a second quote that I pulled out for Spencer and Gus earlier this week. And there are functional differences between the Switch and the PlayStation and Xbox consoles. The Switch is portable, and if it has a screen and less powerful hardware. However, neither the FTC nor its expert consider the extent to which the Switch's differentiated features, including its price, portability, and battery, are factors that customer balances when deciding which console to purchase. So the judge basically completely denied that there was any risk of Call of Duty not being on PlayStation and definitively said that the Switch is in fact a competitor and didn't buy any of their assertions to the contrary, which makes sense. She rightfully states that even if the Switch is a different type of device and a different price point and portable, their Rocket League is on all of those. And it's still, when you buy a console, you are deciding which of those things is valuable to you. And that makes them competitors. It's like saying flip phones and phones aren't competitors because they're different scale, like a smartphone. They are. You're making a choice that those features are valuable to you. That's the best analogy. I just thought that up. That's a great analogy, I think. Like when you go to the store and there's iPhones and then there's flip phones for like grandparents or people that don't want smartphones, those are competitors. You are deciding which one to buy. They're not in the same subclass of the market, but you are making a choice when you buy one or the other based on their feature set. Maybe bigger buttons is more important to you.
Strictly speaking from like a telephone perspective, they are competitors. But most people don't look at them that way.
I think the general consensus from everyone that is rational is that the FTC didn't put forth a very good case.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's accurate to say.
It's hard to say whether this would go a different way if they had put forth a better case. I think they emphasized the wrong things. Like their insistence on pushing the Switch narrative, I think, was a mistake. And their insistence on focusing, they made it seem to the judge and to the audience that listening to this, watching, you know, people like us that are watching, that they were defending Sony and not the consumer. And the judge picked up on that several times. And also how quickly the tides change, right? PlayStation signed an agreement in under a week after the ruling. And I mean, I guess they got their cake and ate it too, right? They tried to block the merger and then it failed and they got to sign the agreement anyway. But this new agreement doesn't include other titles. And I saw Tom Warren on Twitter pulled up an old email from the court documents that said that originally back like last March, I think it was, Jim Ryan and Phil Spencer were emailing back and forth about a 10-year deal for all Activision Blizzard like cross-platform titles. Mm-hmm. So now they've only signed it for Call of Duty. So what does that mean in the future that Microsoft could legally pull back from PlayStation because they only stated they would keep Call of Duty in court?
Well,
and they only signed agreements for Call of Duty.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I this the most fascinating thing about the last few weeks in this case has just been the emails and things that have been discussed in court and kind of released to the public. How Sony's basically said, like, we don't even care about Call of Duty. Like, it's not even about that. It's more they just wanted to stick it to Microsoft. That's why they were fighting it so hard and so publicly, which I thought was kind of interesting. Yeah, it seems like the FTC's case was more based on, like, I guess harm to Sony's perspective, but they were ignoring a ton of other things, which I think the judge saw that. They were like, this isn't going to harm enough people. You know, maybe it hurts Sony, but all indications are that Microsoft, you know, was going to keep Call of Duty on PlayStation. And, you know, that's what they presented to the court. It wasn't just like that they were going to lock these titles away. And I think we talked about this 3 weeks ago. It was Satya Nadella is the one who said, like, from a business standpoint, it makes less sense for us to remove Call of Duty from PlayStation. So I don't know. I think the, like you said, Tim, this version of the FTC since Joe Biden became president has been more aggressive, I think, in trying to counter big tech, in quotes, mergers and acquisitions. And this isn't the first one that they failed in the last 3 years, failed to prevent, I should say. There was one that involved Meta, I think, a couple years ago. So
they bought a VR company.
So they've been, I think, maybe not strangely aggressive, that's not the right word, but like they've been certainly more aggressive than past versions of the FTC have been regarding these types of mergers and acquisitions. I get these email digests basically every day, legal digests at my work email, and they're almost always, not always, but it seems like once a week or a couple times a month at least, they're talking about, you know, Biden's FTC being aggressive with fighting what they believe, you know, to be anti-competitive moves by companies. So it's interesting that it just so happened that one of these moves happened to be, you know, video game centric and Microsoft / Xbox centric. I will say it was funny, the whole, and I'm hoping we can be done after this week, maybe at least in some sense talking about it. But I did think it was funny just seeing, like, in court filings of, you know, from both sides, just these things that we talk about are like the, you know, Xbox and PlayStation and Call of Duty, just like in, like, what I do basically at work. Like, I type stuff up, and, you know, legal briefs or whatever, or memorandums or whatever. And I'm never going to mention or refer to video games probably. So it was funny just to see, like, cause it's everybody uses Times New Roman 12-point font, like, in every legal document. Sometimes people use Georgia. Sometimes they'll use, like, Arial.
Did you see officially Microsoft Office is changing their font?
No.
Calibri or whatever is no longer going to be default font for Microsoft Office. It's a new font they invented.
Interesting. It's a
variant of another font.
Yeah, we use Calibri a lot just because it's the default, like, especially in Outlook as well.
I think originally one of the best things about it was it increased readability and it reduced the cost of printing because it required less ink than Times New Roman.
Probably.
I think that's what it was. And it was easier on the eyes.
But legal briefs, I mean, I would say 90% of the legal briefs and legal documents, motions, everything, anything that you might see, are in Times New Roman. So it was just funny seeing, like, my work, what I do, but then it's like blah 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 blah, Call of Duty, you know, and blah 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 blah, World of Warcraft, or, you know, just Phil Spencer being referenced in legal. It was just funny to see that, interesting, I will say. And
it's you and I, both of our professional careers are relevant to Xbox more often than not. I'm in marketing, so I often criticize in my own head Xbox's marketing on things, or I say, oh wow, that was really good. For example, the weekly emails they send out from Microsoft, if you opt into Xbox marketing emails, I think they're terrible. Like, the call to actions are not clear, the headlines don't correlate with the message in the email. Like, it really bothers me how many things they do in their weekly marketing email that I wouldn't do. The PlayStation ones are better in some areas, but they're worse in others, because I also get the weekly PlayStation emails. But it's also like, nobody cares. I'm like so into the weeds. Like, I'm sure people either open it because it's Xbox and they're curious or they don't. But I mean, somebody somewhere in Microsoft Xbox marketing cares about those conversion rates and how many people are clicking and how many people are buying based on the advertisements in those weekly digests. Yeah, this saga, you say it's almost over. I think my expectation is this is probably going to close on Monday because Tuesday's
nothing in the way.
Well, the UK CMA, but I think they can probably carve out a way around that for the temporary and then solve it in the next month or so. But I think the incentive to close is the deal ends Tuesday with the $3 billion out fee unless they renegotiate with Activision. And there's a couple things that make it seem like that might happen. Number one, the stock market seems to think that's going to happen. The NASDAQ is pulling Activision Blizzard from all of their indexes on Monday. And two, the stock market thinks it's going to happen because the stock is currently hovering around $93, I believe. And the buy price, I closed around $93 on Friday. The buy price for the buyout was $95. So it's creeping incredibly close to the buyout price, meaning the market thinks they're going to get a small amount of margin even buying it at $93.
Yeah.
Well, it and looks it was like in the 80s.
The CMA extended that July 18th deadline to August 29th, or that deadline was extended.
But so. I think Microsoft could close the deal on Monday and find a way to not do business in the UK. Like say, okay, fine, we're just not going to do business in the UK. We'll use an external third party or whatever.
Yeah.
For a month.
Yeah. Which makes
sense.
And
then we'll get this sorted out. There'll be some way that they'll figure out to do this, but I think it's going to close on Monday. I really do.
No, I think you're right. I think when this episode
or today,
is
as you're hearing
airing,
this.
Yeah. Well, in the, as part of the kind of the negotiating that they did with the CMA after the FTC lost, they mentioned that the CMA received a detailed and complex proposal from Microsoft. And I think part of that was Microsoft saying that they'll divest of, there'll be some small divestiture,
yeah,
you know, to kind of compensate for gaining Activision Blizzard, at least in CMA's eyes, which they didn't say, they haven't said publicly anything about that, right? Other than like,
no.
It's something is getting spun off in some way. We were joking about it, I think, was that Thursday or Friday? We were joking about it. I was saying that like they're going to sell Bing off, or they're going to sell off of their remaining like $30,000 in the Zune intellectual property that they still have somewhere, like cobbled away somewhere in a warehouse or in a lab.
This joke will kick differently. Well, actually, I'm going to say it now because it's funny now. They're going to sell off. They're going to divest Major Nelson.
Yeah, that was the divestiture.
Yeah.
Major Nelson.
We'll talk about that later in the show.
Yeah.
I think the one thing I saw seemed to think that they were going to divest cloud operations in the UK, like maybe like the data centers or the operational technology or something to a third party to run, which I don't think they care about at this point, right? A cloud is not it's a feature of Game Pass. It is not a market in and of itself. And if you need to have a third party run that in one country to net millions and billions of dollars of revenue from the Activision Blizzard future products, I think that is fine. Another thing that I keep hearing stated wrong in other podcasts and YouTube shows about this acquisition is people act like when you buy a company and you merge, you're spending money and then you light it on fire and you have this company. I think it was Phil Spencer or somebody that was doing commentary about how the FTC didn't seem to understand how acquisitions work, because you're not spending $69 billion. You're transforming that $69 billion from liquid capital
into an
ownership interest of assets and future products built by that entity. But you own that entity. You own their buildings. You own their assets. You own their employees. Not own, but you know, they work for the company. Those
are
assets under contract. Like, those are all assets. The company can also be grown in value and sold. It's not like the cash is burned. Like, it's not like you couldn't recoup some of that cost. And you expect that cost to make money. And you pay it back over time through, you know, future revenues. Like, it just, I don't know, that FTC thing was sometimes hard to watch. But also, you have to remember, like, Microsoft, they live this industry. The FTC, they have to sue people in all these industries, right? So, like, they have to get themselves up to speed.
Yeah, that was, that's actually funny you mentioned that. One of the, like, first things they told us in law school was that you'll probably have to become an expert in something overnight at some point in your career. And I think the professor that was telling us that was talking about how when he was in practice, before he became a professor, he was like representing somebody. I don't know if it was like a products liability thing. Like, he was representing like an airplane company or doing something with that. And basically, I think they had like an engine failure or something along those lines. And so he was talking about how he spent like basically two straight days in a hangar educating himself on like how the engine worked and possible points of failures and things like that. So they have to do stuff like that, crap like that all the time, I feel like. I mean, some of it is kind of rinse and repeat, but also specific industries have specific quirks and features, I think, that don't exactly carry over. One other comment on this that I would be very curious to find out, which we never will, but just the amount of money Microsoft expended during getting this the entire thing. Through. Yeah, the attorney's fees.
Oh, it has to be multiple millions.
Oh, easily. I mean, if this was like
5-10 million, something.
At least. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if it was more than that.
But it's like I've been saying all this time, they had 3 billion reasons to spend all they need to spend to make this go through.
Yeah.
$3 billion out fee is a huge amount. That's more than Sony spent on all their acquisitions, except for maybe Bungie. I forget what they paid for Bungie.
I'm still annoyed that it was Activision Blizzard. Like, I mean, come on.
I mean, there's worse things they could buy.
$69 billion.
I wouldn't have been very excited if they bought, like, I'm not excited about Activision Blizzard. I don't really care about Activision Blizzard. But I definitely, like, some of the ones that were floated out there, like Square Enix or Capcom, like, I don't really play any games in those ecosystems. And I don't know. I don't know what I would have wanted them to buy, though. Like, honestly, I like more than buying little one-offs. Right.
Well, like, I mean, it's not like, yeah, I think it that I always talk about is the assets from Square Enix and Crystal Dynamics, like all that stuff. Like,
That would have been a good one to get, like, Tomb Raider
for peanuts. Yep.
And Embracer's now going to flush down the toilet because they're falling apart.
Yeah, I want a new Tomb Raider game. I was reminded of that today when I was on the store looking at the sales, because the like 3-pack of the game is of that trilogy is on sale right now.
There's something else I was going to say when we were talking about like having to become an expert in something, and I can't remember what it is. It's going to come to me in a minute. So the other thing is an actor who's apparently, so I put this show together this week, kind of lumping things together. So flowing from the Activision Blizzard deal, I have some more Call of Duty and Activision Blizzard stuff that is not related to the merger. So are we good to move on, unless I remember the thing I forgot?
No, it's fine.
Okay. So an actor who's apparently playing the lead in Call of Duty 2024, so next year's game, his name is Luke Charles Stafford. And apparently he's playing a character called Ratcliffe in Call of Duty 2024. And according to sources, I couldn't find anybody to originally source on this, but apparently it's set during the Gulf War in the 1990s. So, and it's a Black Ops game. So assumedly they're going to go away from the number system and it's going to be like Black Ops Cold War, only this will be Black Ops Gulf War or Black Ops Gulf. I don't know, Black Ops Desert Storm, whatever they want to call it. I have mixed feelings about a Gulf War Call of Duty game. Like, I just feel like it's cool to explore different eras. I do appreciate that. I think Black Ops is doing a better job of that than anybody else in the repeated shooter space. Battlefield has jumped around, but they are like all over the place in both time period and quality. Black Ops specifically, we got everything from, I forget where Black Ops 2, what the time period was, but that was one time period. And then Black Ops and Black Ops 2 both kind of had time hop in the story. And then we got Cold War during the Cold War. We're getting this now. We had a future game with Black Ops 3 and 4. So I think it's cool. I just think it could end up being generic military shooter, right? Like, it could start to blur the lines a little bit too much into Modern Warfare, because Modern Warfare 1 was only set in, you know, 2006 or 2007. What year did that game come out?
Which game? So
Black Ops, or I'm sorry, Call of Duty Modern Warfare would have been 2000. Yeah, so it's only maybe 15 years going to be between the time periods of this Cold War game and the original Modern Warfare.
There's lots of kind of Gulf War motifs that you could explore, though. Kind of
like,
well, so I mean, there's the kind of classic images you see of the burning oil fields. That's from the Gulf War, because the Iraqis, when they were retreating, started blowing up the oil fields. Kind of this idea that people thought the Iraqis were going to use a ton of like gas, like toxic gas and like chlorine gas and mustard gas and all that type of stuff. Because they sarin gas, like actual, like very deadly chemical and biological weapons, which they didn't, obviously, at least not in any like massive amounts. I guess there's been some stuff set in the desert, obviously, like Modern Warfare, like you just mentioned, there's some desert levels.
I'm going to pause you for a second. I just remember what I was going to say earlier. It was that being an expert in something, dang it, I just lost it again. The Ninth Circuit, when they denied the appeal for the preliminary injunction, I just wanted to highlight, like, the reason the court is going to deny an appeal on that is because the fault of the rush is completely on the FTC's fault, because they're the ones that took forever to file. They're the ones that chose the way they filed, and they're the ones that drug this up till the deadline. So if they had filed sooner, brought this to the court sooner, there wouldn't be this rush to get a preliminary injunction so they have time to sue them and block the deal. So like a court is, one, going to look at the facts of the prior judge's ruling, but also when it comes down to one way or the other, I know that they take into effect whose fault is the situation
with them.
Basically. Yeah. Why is there a rush? Is it the fault of the defendant or the merging entity, or is it the fault of the
government?
The government. And in this case, the FTC, the urgency is the fault of the FTC.
Yeah, and they defer to what the judge defines on the facts. They just look at like if the law was misapplied or interpreted incorrectly. So that's what the appellate court would do. But yeah, you're right. The FTC certainly did not do themselves any favors by rushing here at kind of the 11th hour to try to stop it. Because they could have done it. They could have filed something 6, 7, 8 months ago.
Yeah. And sorry to interrupt you to throw that out there, but the reason wanted to highlight that is because, again, I don't really care if Activision is acquired. I've always thought it was going to go through because the money was incentivized to do so. And it was approved in most countries. But if we were going to block it, our government just didn't do a good job. Like, if this was the outcome that we needed as the consumer, the FTC didn't do its job in putting forth a case that was compelling. Because I especially in closing arguments, the judge was just throwing up walls left and right. And at first I was like, is this how it normally is? You know, the judge this is her chance to ask a lot of questions. But then when Microsoft presented theirs and she didn't, it all went smoothly through. I was like, oh, this is because they're on their back foot. They don't have the answers to all of her questions, or they don't have good answers. So anyway, back to the Gulf War.
I was going to say, the
sarin gas. Go.
Oil fields, gas, yeah. Well, and I don't know, there's not a lot of media on the Gulf War. I mean, you've got Generation Kill, or not Generation Kill, that's the Operation Enduring Freedom. Jarhead, the Jake Gyllenhaal movie, that's like the only thing I can think of that's actually a Gulf War piece of media that we have. So I don't know.
Seems
I
mean, like there might be a few Netflix movies that are
could be like, maybe some ooh. Random little things, but that's the only one I can think of. And I think this idea of it being the first like technologically modern war is kind of interesting. Like obviously people say like the first modern war like that I can have a lot of answers, but I think universally people would say the Gulf War was the first time that, you know, we're using, there's like a mass usage of like night vision, of GPS, of stealth technology, the M1 Abrams tank, which was leaps and bounds ahead of anything the Iraqis had, the Humvee, first time the Humvee was ever used in combat, technically on a mass scale. I think they used it various clandestine stuff in the 80s, but it was the first
time. There is some iconic imagery of the Humvees of that era.
Yeah, so there's lots of things like that you can talk about. Like I said, kind of that idea with what they thought the Iraqis would use with the gas. They also, at the time, the Iraqi army was like the second or third largest on the planet. And so there was all this kind of idea of like, are we going to have like a major war here? Lots of anticipation and lots of buildup that ultimately kind of petered out and nothing that intense ever came of it. I mean, the war only lasted like, technically speaking, like a month. I think it was like a 6 or 7 or 8 month long period from when we started building up, but the actual, you know, Operation Desert Storm, as it was called, was like a month. So I don't know. It's kind of cool. And it was the largest, I think at the time, or it still is, or was at the time, was the largest military operation since World War II. So as far as like the amount of people and countries involved. So I don't know. It's just interesting. I mean, like I said, there's not a lot of media there. So I would definitely like that a lot. I think it'd be cool.
Yeah. I do appreciate just them jumping around different eras, though. Like, that's the thing I'm most excited about.
Yeah.
Okay. The other last Activision thing I have this week is just to acknowledge that the boys, the Amazon Prime TV show is doing a crossover with Call of Duty in the new mid-season update where Starlight, Homelander, and Black Noir, if you've watched that show or you've read the comic books, are all coming as playable characters in the game through paid content packs, as well as skins for guns and weapon charms and some other stuff. The skins are the three characters with their likenesses from the TV show on Amazon Prime, though. So it's the actors, like Anthony Starr, who plays Homelander. It is his Homelander in the game. And it's both hilarious because it's like these superheroes from this offbeat, non-traditional superhero story, very violent story that fits better with Call of Duty than maybe like Captain America would. But also it's just weird to see Homelander running with an assault rifle because he's, you know, basically that world's version of Superman. So sort of as far as powers. So he doesn't need guns. I'm sure they're going to sell a ton of these, but I did log into the game to see what it was looking like in game, like what the characters looked like, and they look very much like their real life counterparts. But I just think it's interesting that Call of Duty is very much trying to be Fortnite with their like having streamers in the game and having tie-ins with stuff. And I'm sure it's working for them. Spencer, any thoughts? Normally this would be at the end of the show, but since I was throwing all the Activision stuff,
everything's turning into Fortnite. That's my comment.
Yeah. I mean, it's true. Everything has to be monetized. Everything has season passes. I wanted to say this on Twitter, but it needed a little more nuance than Twitter. I am so sick of season passes. Like I was okay with it when it was a few games, but now everything has a season pass. The new Lego racing game has season passes. Lego racing. Why? It's gonna bite him in the butt, because as we're seeing with all those live service games that are failing, there's only room for so many season passes in a person's playing. Like you can only play so many games at a time, and when you buy a season pass, you're basically committing to a certain amount of time with that game because you got to get your money's worth or you're just wasting it. Anyway, okay. This next group of stories that I have are about EA. So our first one, story number 4, EA has announced a Black Panther game coming from some of the developers of Middle-earth Shadow of Mordor series, as well as others. And they formed a new studio to make the game. They have a logo that they put out with this announcement. The new studio is called Cliffhanger Games. It's a new EA studio. I think it's set up somewhere in the Northeast, like Seattle or somewhere. They have a logo for the game that's like a Black Panther crest with the purple highlights. Here's a quote from their announcement. As we celebrate the 57th anniversary of Black Panther's comic debut this July, we're thrilled to announce Cliffhanger Games, a new AAA development studio based in Seattle. There it is. Is working on an original third-person, single-player Black Panther game in collaboration with Marvel Games. Our mission is to build an expansive and reactive world that empowers players to experience what it is like to take on the mantle of Wakanda's protector, the Black Panther, end quote. I like to see it that it says single player. None of that Avengers nonsense. None of that live service, multiplayer, co-op, never-ending game. Just a tight single player game. I think what we're seeing here is the Spider-Manification, right? We got Black Panther, we got Iron Man, we got Wonder Woman. Yeah. Well, I mean, we got Black Panther, we got Wonder Woman, we got, I mean, the single player superhero game is coming back alive. We haven't really had, the last couple have been these like co-op games.
Yeah.
From,
I mean, we'll
Gotham
see.
Gotham Knights and the Avengers.
I don't know if you guys talked about it while I was gone, but that, or no, I don't think there's anything in the news, but I think I had said something about that. I had completely forgotten that there was a Wonder Woman game even being made. So
because games take 5 to 7 years to make
now. There's a lot of these comic book games that are kind of in the periphery floating out there. And who knows, man? Who really knows if any or all of these see the light of day?
I mean, I'm sure it'll see the light of day. I just think about half of them are going to be Gotham Knights and half of them are going to be Spider-Mans. And there's going to be some turds. There's going to be some turds. It is a little scary that they're forming a new studio. Like, we've seen a lot of these studio announcement things, and not a lot of them have yet to turn out and see what kind of quality they do. The last time I remember a new studio forming and immediately putting out an amazing AAA game was Respawn with Titanfall. Everybody else forms a new studio, and we either don't hear anything for years or they get bought up by somebody bigger. Now, a couple of these new ones have been formed within already existing entities like this one at EA. So hopefully they get the resources and can shift, you know, development talent around. But we know there's another Black Panther game coming. Remember, there's that one from, I think it's Amy Hennig's team, where they're making like Black Panther and Captain America in World War II. Remember that game?
I forgot that that existed too.
Okay, well now we're going to have two Black Panther games. And then the Iron Man game is being made by Motive, who's the studio that did Star Wars, the flight game. What was the name of it? Squadrons, yeah. And
it's too bad they
did some other
coordinate.
Stuff too. I think
once
it was
again,
Motive that did that.
Once again, it's too bad that nobody can coordinate with movies or any wider marketing, but whatever.
That would be so hard. Like, remember the quality we used to get back in the day, though? That's what would happen, because
true,
it takes way more years to make a movie than or games than it. Now, maybe if they start now and they target Marvel movies that are coming out 5 years from now that are announced, like Avengers, Secret Wars, or Avengers Kang Dynasty, which are coming out in like 2026 or 2027, or maybe even beyond that. So my other EA story this week is a woman that was a voice actor in 2005 Need for Speed Most Wanted has indicated that a remake is underway, which is interesting. Because she also said that it's coming out in 2024. The reason this is most interesting, it's not surprising that EA would remake some of their more popular Need for Speed games. They've already done that once with Hot Pursuit. What's interesting is when they remade Hot Pursuit, they remade the new one from like 2010 timeframe, not the original Hot Pursuit. But here, this rumor, because this actress was only in the original Most Wanted, she wasn't in the Most Wanted reboot they did in like 2012 or ish, somewhere around there. That in this instance, they might be rebooting the original one, which was very well thought of. This is the game that came out right after the Xbox 360 launched. It was like a 2005 game, so right with the new 360. And it was like the game to have for racing that year. This and I don't remember what year Forza came to 360. I think it was the next year. So this was like the racing game that fall. And I remember loving this game. That M3 on the cover is iconic. I would be for this if they do it well. I hope it's real. 2024, though.
Yeah, Need for Speed Most Wanted, I feel like, was the first. That was kind of the first in the line of ones that people feel really nostalgic about. It's like this and then Underground 1 and 2. And what was the other one? I can picture the cover on my face, my face. Yeah, I can picture it in my face right now, but no.
Underground and Most Wanted are the ones the most iconic to me.
Yeah, hold on. I'm looking. Yeah, Need for Speed Most Wanted
list of all the Need
with
for Speed.
The M3. Yep, the M3 GTR. Which is interesting that it was that, because I'm pretty sure BMW made like two of those M3 GTRs. Let's see. Yeah.
I'm looking up how many BMW.
Hot Pursuit 2 is pretty sick. I do recall that one. That's an iconic one. Underground 2, Most Wanted.
They only made 10 of that car. You were near
to 10. Okay.
BMW M3G was M3 a street GTR, version in total. Only 10 of these cars were ever made. Minimum requirement imposed to make the American Le Mans series at the time.
Yeah, I'd say that the stretch from Hot Pursuit 2 in 2002 to Underground, Underground in 2003, Underground 2 in 2000, yeah. I'd say that stretch from like 2002 to 2006, those four games, that was the absolute what's above pinnacle. Like platinum, the platinum era of Need for Speed, right there was that era.
It's interesting though, because they already remade Most Wanted and Hot Pursuit, right? Yeah, those were the two that remade in the 2010s, and they already remastered one of those reboots. So then now they're going to do a remaster of the original. Even though they've already done a reboot, it's very like, again, brands need to be more consistent with their messaging, and they're like, there's now going to be three versions of this game, and then the first one and the third one will be similar and the second one will stand alone. It's just very confusing. It matters less nowadays because it's digital storefronts, but when you used to send your grandma as a kid for Christmas to Target to buy you a game for Christmas, kids make Christmas lists and their grandma takes it to the store and goes to the electronics person and says, hey, little Johnny wants this game, can you give me Most Wanted? And the store clerk's gonna go, which one? We have three and we have multiple platforms. And you go, Xbox. Which Xbox?
Yeah,
I don't know. Like, it's stupid marketing, stupid naming. Moving on. Okay, Xbox added a new feature this last week. This is pretty cool. Their quote is, it will let players capture 60 seconds clips and report inappropriate voice activity on any multiplayer title with in-game voice chat on Xbox Series X, S, and Xbox One. The reason this is so revolutionary is you now can report people and record what they said, not just in game chat and things they do in the Xbox ecosystem. You now can do it when they like if you were harassed or abused verbally in in-game chat, you can now submit that for reported feature for whatever purpose to be reviewed. And this could go a long way to dealing with the toxicity that has become in-game voice chat with strangers. I can't tell you the number of times that I enter a chat and people are having conversations with other people, and it's just so toxic. And I remember the 360 days when everybody had a mic. And there was some trash talk, but it was certainly not like the toxic wasteland that talking to strangers is now.
Man,
when you enter a game.
All I know is, yeah. I mean, and the memes that still kind of perpetuate regarding like the Modern Warfare 2 era of Xbox 360 and game chat. I don't know. It was the Wild West. It's always been the Wild West. There's always like, for me, my experience was there literally always was like someone that sounded like they were 12 years old. And then you'd have another guy that sounded like he was, like 30.
And another guy that's high. Yeah. Completely high and can't understand a word you're saying.
Yeah. And they would always start yelling at the squeaker, as the 12-year-old was called, the squeaker, to get him to shut up or,
and then everyone inappropriately harassing every woman that enters a lobby. It's just, yeah. It's so toxic.
Or the squeaker's mom, just be like, you know, all the comments. It's a funny and classical period.
I guess it means I'm a decent human being that I cannot put my mind in the mindset of a person that either A, cheats at games, and B, like, harasses people, like, in a absolutely, like, criminal way on game chat. Like, you just have to be a bad human being. Also, when you cheat at video games, like, you know you cheated. It's not like you actually accomplished something. I don't know. It's just so stupid. Okay, following up on the tease earlier, number 7, Xbox Live's Major Nelson, Larry Herb himself, is stepping down after 22 years with Microsoft. I'm going to read his two tweets. He had a three-tweet series tied together, but the third one was just saying that the Xbox podcast was going on hiatus as a result. So here's his goodbye announcement. After 20 incredible years, by the way, why does he say 20? Because all the media surrounding this and reporting said 22 years, so I don't know why he says 20. He says after 20, but I don't know. After 20 incredible years, I've decided to take a step back and work on the next chapter of my career. As I take a moment and think about all we have done together, I want to thank the millions of gamers around the world who have included me as a part of their lives. Also, thanks to the Xbox team members for trusting me to have a direct dialogue with our customers. The future is bright for Xbox, and as a gamer, I'm excited to see the evolution. Thanks, and I'll see you online, Larry Herb. Really is an end of an era. Like, when you think of Xbox, you really do think of Larry Herb. And he kind of was less prominent for a few years there in the early Xbox One era.
Mm-hmm.
And then they brought him back with a vengeance, I think, because he was missed and leadership changes and things like that. Yeah, it's a sad day. I wonder what the future is for him. He did say in some replies that he was going to take some time off, be with his family, and then do something else. But I wonder if he already has his future lined up, or if he's wanting to just pursue something differently. And, you know, he probably has the freedom to do that. Yeah. He's also getting older. You know, I don't know how old he is. I'm going to look it up right now.
Larry. Yeah. When I saw that, I think he's, like you kind of pointed to, Tim,
I feel he's like 65.
Oh, wow.
So
I would not have guessed that he was that
I
old.
Would not have guessed that either. I would have guessed probably 50s or early 60s. Just
straight
maybe.
Up retire if he wanted to. Yeah, I don't know. I just, I felt like he was a lot more prominent in the 360 era.
Yeah, 100%.
Not as much in the Xbox One or even like the Series X era. I feel like he kind of slid more in the background there for some reason. And I always thought it was a little interesting the last like 5 to 10 years that they didn't use him more in marketing, not necessarily marketing, but just it was always Phil Spencer. You know, it was never they never had or even I mean, there was plenty of other prominent people at Xbox that you would see talk, but it just felt like he never was there. Like you never saw him on any of the E3 stuff anymore or anything like that. I just remember. On the 360 era, watching Major's Minute, you know, all the time.
Yeah.
That was funny.
They did make a concerted effort to focus more on developers talking about their own work, which I think was part of it. Like he used to, and he's always kind of represented the community, right? Like he was at all the like fan fests and stuff. I met him. I was on the front row of E3 2019, the Xbox presentation. We happened to end up right on the front row. I've said this before, right where Keanu walked out, right in front of me. But before the show started, Bonnie Ross, Larry Herb, and a few others were just at the front just talking. And just anybody could go up and, you know, talk with them. And so I went up and talked to him for a little while. And of everybody I talked at E3 2018 and 2019 that was a major person in the industry, the two nicest people that spent the most time not knowing who I was or anything and just, you know, just talking to me like a normal person and being cool and just having a great conversation were Larry Herb and Pete Hines. I talked to Pete Hines for so long. He was so down to earth, very, very cool to talk to. and Larry Herb, very, very kind, very generous. Just very, you know, he didn't know who I was. I walked up and he had just a great conversation. So I respect him greatly. I'm interested to see how this affects Xbox marketing going forward, how they deal with things like he's kind of been the, like, if you follow Xbox on social media, the main sources of putting things, announcements out are Larry Herb, Xbox Wire, and Xbox official accounts. And Larry Herb did this thing where he would announce every game going live. Like every single game, I think, that goes live on Xbox Live, he would have an automated tweet that says this game is now available with a link to it.
You're so right.
And I'm pretty sure that that's like a feature of going on the Xbox platform, is you will have Major Nelson announce that your game comes out and his audience then has an opportunity to engage with it. I wonder if that will continue, because I'm pretty sure he was manually, like, he himself was setting those up, and his you know, secretary, or if he has one. So I wonder if that continues, or if that's something that he, as the director of programming, had chosen to do.
RIP Free Code Friday. It was from him. I was looking, I'm on Twitter right now. I'm looking, I won it on August 21st, 2020. So almost 3 years ago. 6 months of Game Pass Ultimate.
I won a code from Free Code Friday forever ago, but it was before you, and I won a code for Witcher 3.
It's funny.
Which I think I was trying to win something else, because I think I owned it on disc at the time and I won that by mistake. But I was like, okay, well, at least this way I don't have to put the disc in. And now, of course, I'm all digital anyway, so it doesn't really matter. I like to have digital. So, okay, following up that, number eight. Oh, do you have another thought?
Well, I was going to say, according to Wikipedia, he started working at Xbox MSN. Or Microsoft in 2001, but Xbox in 2003.
So oh, yeah, that's true. Divisions. That is true. Yeah, he was at MSN something. I forget what he did. It was something at MSN. MSN Live, maybe. I don't know. That makes sense. 20 years at Xbox, 22 at Microsoft. Also, great run. And I think he was in radio before that. He always talks about his time
podcasting,
in radio.
Podcasting, yeah.
Yeah, I cannot believe that he is 65. Like, that is so shocking to me. On the high end, I would have thought, like, mid-50s. Yeah, 60 maybe, but, like, 65, like... Although he's only 4 years older than Mr. Tom Cruise. I just saw Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1 this last weekend. Great movie. Can't wait for the second part. Okay. Number eight. The Xbox Friends and Family plan that they've been testing in, not secret at all. They have announced the countries they're testing it in. They're ending the tests in August. I think they were only testing in two countries. And then they told Eurogamer. Let's see. Eurogamer has a statement here. We're excited about how the Friends and Family plan has resonated with our gamers, and we'll be evaluating the learnings to help create an offer that we can bring to more players worldwide in the future. So it does seem like this will probably come back in some way, shape, or form. It's just going to be probably a global launch when it comes back. No comment there, Spencer. Nothing to say.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I forgot about that too, the Friends and Family plan.
Yeah, well, it's one of those things where it didn't affect us. It's just like, hey, this might be coming in the future. It does seem like a good deal, although I could see it being a hassle. But, you know, people like to do the game sharing and stuff like that. So I could see it being important to a lot of people. Plus, I know for me, it's super annoying that I have to be logged in if I want to play. Like, example, today, I should have talked about this earlier. So I set up my Xbox Series S in the living room. It had been in a drawer because I took it with me on a trip. So the kids could try playing something, because I'm trying to teach my kids to play games. They're 3.5. And I saw on Game Pass that there is 2 Paw Patrol games. I think one of them is coming off and the other one is staying. And so I went to Game Pass and I filtered for friends and family, or family and kids section. And they have roughly 30 games that they have labeled as kid friendly. And so I downloaded a few of those and I let my kids play the Paw Patrol game, which went pretty well. For 3.5, my daughter was, the game only used 3 buttons, the left joystick, the A button, and the Y button in the first level. And the only part that she couldn't do on her own was I had to do a QTE, where you had to like hold up on the joystick and tap buttons in a certain order, kind of like Paw Rappa the Rappa, but a little bit simpler. and she completed the first level, her and her sister. So that was pretty cool. But the hijinks I had to jump through because I have multiple consoles and only one of them can be my home console is if I'm not on my home console, I have to log into my account. Then I have to switch over to my wife's account, which is what the kids play on. And then I have to leave my account logged in the background so that they can access the Game Pass games. Now, I could set that console as my home console, but then I run into problems when I can't remember what the situation was, where I ran into a problem where I couldn't access my games in my office. I think it was because there was an internet connection issue or something, and my console was not marked as my home console, so it would no longer let me play. Anyway, I play in my console 99% of the time, so it doesn't make sense for me to make that other console my home console. Anyway, all that to say is if we had friends and family and it was only a few dollars more or something, it would be easier for me to upgrade. Plus, at that point, Spencer, you and I are obviously related. Your wife, or my wife, is your sister. You know, we could do the friends and family as well and maybe save some money by having you and I be on the same plan. But, you know, it's however it works out. It does seem like a good thing to have, though, just because as they focus on subscriptions and Netflix is doing this thing where they're trying to force everybody to buy their own subscription, having a built-in way to share it with the people that you are closely related to seems like a good idea. I think Netflix should do the same thing. Instead of letting you buy additional households, let you pay like a big premium and give it to a certain number of people and make it a little bit simpler. That is kind of how it works, but it's not perfect. You can only add two households and it's a whole thing. Anyway, final story. Number 9, Everspace 2, a surprise launch on Game Pass. The game came to consoles on August 15th. I think it was launched in final form on PC in April and had been in early access for like 2 years. So Everspace 2, now available day one, Game Pass. But the more interesting thing is somebody that worked on the game did an interview with, I'm going to pull it up here, the Xbox Expansion Pass podcast or YouTube channel, I guess it is. And a couple interesting things that he said on the podcast. And let me see. The guy's name is Michael Shade, CEO and co-founder of Rockfish Games. The interesting thing he was saying, and I'll read the quote here in a second, is that Game Pass deals actually benefit PlayStation games and gamers. And here's how he explained it. The first quote, first he said that having the money from the Game Pass deal allowed them to add 9 to 12 months of more production time to the game. So a whole year of additional development from the upfront cash from the Game Pass deal. Secondly, he said, we could have made Everspace 2 without the deal on the Xbox Game Pass, but it would have been a smaller game. And then finally, it's maximum flexibility, extra funding. You just make a better game and everybody's happy. Even the PlayStation fans get a better game on PlayStation 5 because of the deal with Game Pass. So in his case, a game that's not a major publisher AAA game, but it's still a pretty big game, getting the upfront money and guaranteed money that Game Pass allowed them, they reinvested into the game to make the game better, and it benefited all platforms, not just Xbox. And it, because it's only one platform, it also ends up as a hedge of on their bets, right? Because they now can still sell on PlayStation, PC, and Xbox. They're only out the, like, they're going to lose some sales on Xbox to subscription, but they got that money upfront in the fee that they received from Xbox Game Pass. So I don't know. It just seems like it's a decent risk mitigator as well as a way to get money up front when you're still in development to make a game better. So just an interesting perspective. Not that he's right or wrong. It's just one perspective, and there can be multiple. But
this is kind of neat. I'm gonna check this out.
It does
out.
Look cool. Interestingly, I did not see a ton of announcements that this came up. I saw when it was announced like a few days before, but like I didn't see the like Major Nelson tweet that says, hey, this is now available. But I'm sure I just missed it because
the
weekend was dominated
yet,
by FTC. Yeah, it was the 15th. That was yesterday.
I thought it was August 15th.
Oh, that's why. I thought it was July 15th. You're right. August 15th.
Nah. I wish I could. I hate when the Wikipedia page for something isn't in the box on the right on Google. I hate that.
So, oh, I always, when I'm searching for the Wikipedia page, I just type whatever I want, WIKI, wiki, and then it's always the first response when I do that.
It's annoying though.
Well, I'm an idiot. I was wondering why I couldn't find this in the app to download. It is August 15th. Well, yeah, that game looks cool. It's I'll probably end up playing more of that because that'll fill the exoprimal sized hole in my time killer space. There you go. That's it. That's an extra long episode of FTC versus Microsoft. I'm titling this episode "The FTC Preliminary Injunction Denied." Multiform episode 256.
FTC denied. It's confusing because everywhere you look, it says the Everspace 2 launched on April 6th, 2023, which I think was when it came out on PC.
But yeah, and no it was, one is even saying, before that, it was early access.
I can't find anything about the actual release date.
Well, if you No, that's the console release date, August 15th.
I know. I'm just saying I can see that August 15th on here, but
Oh, you mean the early access release date?
No, that's not what I mean. I just want something that tells me the release date of Everspace 2. This says January 18th, 2021. So
those are the three release dates. It had an early access release date, a PC release date, and a console release date. So it has three dates. January 21, April 22 or 23, whichever it was, and then August 15th, 23.
Right. I understand that, but nothing anywhere says that.
Yeah.
Well, like I can't find it.
Bad journalism.
I can't find it on anything. It's just annoying. Whatever. Like even on Wikipedia, it doesn't even say it. There's not even like whatever. It doesn't matter.
If you click the article from one of the ones I saw was Games Radar. There, I just put it at the bottom of the show notes. That one has a summary of it all, although it doesn't have the exact early access date. It just says early 2021. But yeah, okay. Cool. Okay, well, by the time you listen to this, you will probably already know what has happened with the FTC, or not the FTC, with Activision Blizzard. I suspect either Monday or Tuesday, the deal will have gone through, and it will be around the CMA pending the resolution there, and we will talk about that next week. And then the question is, going forward, the only coverage we'll probably have on this after this is, number one, what happens with the CMA? And number two, when do things start trickling into Game Pass, and in what order do they trickle into Game Pass? Like, does old stuff come in first? Does newer stuff? Do they just drop it all at once? Is it going to take a while? It took a couple weeks for Bethesda, I believe, some stuff, and then it did it in a couple waves. But I mean, potentially we could start seeing a bunch of stuff drop into Game Pass within the next few weeks, which would be interesting, especially because I'm really interested to see what they can get. Like, are they going to dig up old stuff? Like, I saw somebody on Reddit suggesting, does this mean the Activision Wolfenstein game could come back alive?
Oh my gosh.
Could that go to Game Pass because now it could be relicensed because the two are now owned by the same entity? Because I don't think you can buy that anymore, especially digitally. Maybe you can, it's just not backwards compatible. Could it be backwards compatible now? I don't know, but we're going to find out. And with that, we've reached the end of the show. Thank you for listening. I'm Tim Shelton. As always, you can follow me on Twitter at Tim Shelton, or I'm now on Threads at TimJ22.
And I am Spencer Rain. You can follow me on Twitter at Makes It Rain.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.
New episodes post every Monday morning at 10 a.m. Eastern. You can contact us on Twitter at MultiformPod or by email at questions@multiformpodcast.com. If you enjoyed our show and you're feeling extra generous, please share it with your friends or on social media. You can subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, or anywhere you listen.